Beetroot juice, used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, caused waves at the last Olympics. Clinical studies proved 2 glasses of beetroot juice per day could increase stamina by 16%. I've been using it, and this product is excellent. Beets are a nutrition goldmine, so call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. Get a 30-day supply free. That's 800-738-2198 or intelligentbeets.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to Dorothy Mullen, who is the originator of the SUPPERS programs. It's a community-based program to get people to focus on their eating habits, to improve their sourcing of food, to recognize the relationship between diet and how they feel. And I highly advise that if you haven't listened to it already, listen to part one, because it's a great introduction into the relationship between food and mood and addiction, and how addiction overmasters our resolve and gets in the way of implementation of healthy eating programs. You know, really what I like about your program, Dorothy, is that it's not a top-down approach. You know, the government is often talking about this. You know, let's improve the eating habits of Americans. There's laws and regulations and programs, and, you know, millions and millions of dollars are spent, often to no avail, because really the way that these programs tend to be successful is when, you know, all politics is local. And when communities get together and individuals conduct these programs in an ad hoc way, kind of a grassroots fashion, then they're often more successful. And your program has grown and grown and grown. I see that there's a large number of professionals and trainers and facilitators involved. So tell us, what does it actually involve? I mean, some people may envision that this is like a food version of an AA meeting. You know, somebody shows up at a meeting and everybody's sitting around on folding chairs morosely, and then somebody pipes up, you know, my name is Mary and I'm addicted to bagels. You know, that's not what it is it?
No, it is socially lovely. It's one of our mottos is healing is a social experience. So what we know from working with people who have addictions, and as far as I'm concerned, my definition of addicted people includes just about everybody who has type 2 diabetes. You know, they've eaten their way into their diagnosis. And the meetings have to provide delicious food. There has to be a gratifying, warm, safe, wonderful social experience, or we will not get people to do the very challenging work that they have to do. Because let's face it, what SUPPERS offers people is the opportunity to give up your favorite foods. That is the challenge, because so many of us have whatever our endorphin responses are.
Well, that doesn't sound like fun. I mean, that right there is daunting. But it has to. So it has to be an appealing portal to what is essentially a little bit of a, you know, what seems at first to be a sacrifice.
Hard work. Yeah. It's hard work. So in order to get people to attend the meetings and work the program, we have to provide all kinds of alternate sources of pleasure. Right, because what we're rivaling is people's addictive relationship with the foods that are giving them the diabetes or inflaming their joints or whatever it is that's brought them into the program. So we cook food deliciously. We have chefs in the program that help come to train the facilitators if they're not already good cooks. It has to be colorful. We do a lot with local sourcing. So there's like a value system that develops around people's eating habits. It's socially delightful. The first principle of the program is to actively practice non-judgment. So it is a very pleasant social experience with very specific expectations about people accepting each other, being warm, creating an environment of safety, because we're asking people to do food experiments, to do the elimination diets, to try the cleanses, to maybe introduce gluten-free options or start eating healthier versions of their favorite junk food, you know, use the health food store varieties, just in the spirit of doing less harm nutritionally, to ease their way into what's for many people an uncomfortable experience because, in the way I see it, people go through withdrawal to get from where they are to where they need to be to reverse the type 2 diabetes or reduce the units of insulin, or we have quite a few people in the program now who are either on less medication with rheumatoid arthritis or off medication for rheumatoid arthritis simply by doing these experiments in the safe and warm setting of the SUPPERS program to figure out which are their inflammatory foods. We don't recommend any specific diet. We offer people the opportunity to try different ways of eating. So if they know a facilitator who teaches Eat to Live and Joel Fuhrman and vegan and that appeals to them, they can go try that for a couple of months. And if they say, oh no, I think I have to have some meat and let me try the paleo or the Whole 30 or one of those. So they have the opportunity in a non-judgmental setting to try these different ways of eating and see which are the things that reduce their joint inflammation, reduce their dependence on insulin, whatever it is that brought them to the program. So it's as delightful an experience that you can have while dealing with the very hard work of giving up some of your favorite foods.
In fact, I, as a future guest, and I actually found her via your program, is Dr. Allie Cohen, who is she's a rheumatologist in New Jersey, mm-hmm. who really uses an integrative approach. I mean, she certainly uses medication where necessary, mm-hmm. but she often advocates diet change as an adjunct to conventional medical therapy for serious rheumatological problems. And yes. So, you know, she probably is a resource to those of your clients who, or participants who have these kind of conditions. And it's reassuring that doctors are involved because, it's to their benefit to get their patients to get on healthier programs.
Oh, sure. And we have, you know, people are regular, the professionals are regularly referring to the program because they know they can't participate one mouthful at a time, you know, one meal at a time in their patients' lives. And so they refer to us and say, well, this one needs to be on a gluten-free diet, or that one needs to have a low glycemic diet, or this one has celiac disease, you know, he's got to have food from a dedicated facility or what have you. But yeah, the doctors who practice what I used to call environmental medicine, do we still call it environmental medicine?
It is now called environmental medicine. It used to be called clinical ecology. That's the old term, but it's no longer PC, so we say environmental medicine is still cool. You know, integrated medicine, CAM, complementary and alternative medicine, take your pick.
We depend on these doctors, too, because sometimes there is, like in my own case with mercury poisoning, there is simply no way to accomplish the whole thing with diet and lifestyle change. Some of these people absolutely have to do chelation therapy or, you know, some of the other therapies to get these heavy metals and minerals out of their bodies because, I mean, cilantro just doesn't work fast enough.
Right, right. You need a lot of cilantro, and it's a little bit helpful, but not enough. Mm-hmm. So what's for dinner? Give us some specifics. I mean, your most recent gathering, what was on the menu?
So my most recent gatherings have been paleo. I'm lucky to live in central New Jersey in Princeton where we have lots of local farmers, so I can get the locally sourced meats. And on paleo, it's interesting. I think the public probably doesn't really understand what paleo is. It's probably about 70% vegan.
Right.
Tons
of vegetables. People tend to think it's just, you know, like big slabs of like 22-ounce sirloin steak, you know, like dinosaur, like the Flintstones, right? You know, like the brontosaurus steaks. No, not that way.
But that is, in fact, not at all what it is. But it is built on certain assumptions about how people experience inflammation. And some of us, me included, don't do well on anything that was ever a seed. So while I can look at a list of foods and say, yes, I believe that beans and rice and nuts and pumpkin seeds and so forth are very healthy food, they give me such abdominal distension and pain, digestive pain, that I have to say, okay, I have to throw away my conventional wisdom about what healthy food is and try these experiments. And I simply do very well with maybe 3 or 4 ounces of meat and oodles and oodles of vegetables. So my suppers, I run four or five of them a week myself, and then there are like 40 other facilitators running these meetings now. But at my meetings, it's a formula. There's always a raw salad or slaw. There's always a cooked vegetable. There's often a root vegetable or a starch that other people can have that I can't have, like brown rice or something like that. And then maybe at most a 4-ounce portion of a local piece of meat or a little piece of salmon or something like that. And I want to make sure I make this point while I have your attention. We do this all through trained volunteer facilitators, so people pay little more than the cost of the food. It is a nearly right. free-to-users program.
That's so important, because I mean, some people say, well, this has got to be like a real money-making operation for Dorothy.
Not.
So, I mean, she must be raking it in because, you know, at $50 a dinner, you know, you get 10, 15 people each time and, you know, do the math. No, it's not that way, right?
It's not. There is no math. We cover our costs, so it's $10 or $12 for most of our meals. If we get somebody that's doing like $30 a pound salmon or something like that, it might be $15 or $20. But most of our meals come in $12 or less because, I mean, in this regard, you're right, it is a little bit like AA. It's members serving members. Mm-hmm. You know, facilitators rise up in the program. They experience benefits and, you know, out of gratitude and interest and passion for whatever it is that they're interested in, they start offering the meeting. So it is very much an inside job.
So you have people of all socioeconomic backgrounds. It's not just for the elite rich, you know, the people who shop at Whole Foods and buy organic sirloin. You get every stratum of society.
This is correct. Now, one thing I will say is we practice what we call nutritional harm reduction. And let's face it, in Princeton there are people who have more wherewithal to get the locally grown, grass-fed, you know, the really top quality stuff. But I'm as likely.
Yeah, because otherwise it's a little elitist, right? You know, to say, well, you've got to have organic arugula, and then, you know, some people.
Right.
I never get out of Whole Foods with less than a three-digit, tab at the end.
There you are, and so no matter where people start, there is something that they can do that is affordable. In a conventional grocery store, I'm as likely to give a tour in a conventional grocery store and say, this is the best that you can do here. Don't stress about the details. It is so important to eat vegetables that just eat lots of vegetables and you're doing better than you were doing yesterday if you weren't eating vegetables. You know, I'm very likely to introduce them to the Environmental Working Group. You've heard of this.
Sure. Yeah, great resource. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, if you're worried about the budget, which most of us are, you know, avoid the tree fruits that are conventional. They're going to have a lot of.
They have like the Dirty Dozen list of, you know, the worst possible
things
that you really should get the organic version of. And then they actually say, well, you know, maybe these conventional ones, they're not that bad. So if you have to, you can you know, save a few bucks getting conventional whatever, you know, conventional snow peas or something. I don't know.
Right. So every step of the way, there is something that you can do that's less harm than what you were doing before. And that's the attitude that we take because, of course, as you know, stress is a form of poison, too.
Yeah.
And we certainly don't want people to experience toxic level of stress over their eating choices.
Or you can develop orthorexia nervosa. It's actually a term, you know, where people are so obsessive about the foods that they take in that they become nervous wrecks.
Right.
We don't want that.
Right.
All right. So this is now regional. So what's the, for our listening audience, you know, if they're in New Jersey, is it across, you know, full New Jersey, you know, not that big a state, but there's northern and central and southern New Jersey. Where do you have chapters or where do you have facilitators?
So we have meetings in a radius, I'm going to say maybe an hour and a half. Outside of or around Princeton, we are just starting to get meetings down towards the Philadelphia area. We're just starting to get meetings in South Jersey. One is starting in Baltimore. We reach up into North Jersey, but not all the way up by the New York line. We have someone starting soon in the Bronx, maybe one in Brooklyn. So
wow,
it all depends on training facilitators. If I can get people to come to Princeton to train to facilitate, I can help them launch meetings.
Well, what if we have, like, you know, someone who's, you know, somewhat sophisticated in this area, has really got, like you, fire in the belly about this type of transformation, who, you know, say they're listening to this podcast and they're in Long Island, which where you don't have mm-hmm. a chapter, and they want to get involved. It's, you know, it's a long drive, but they could come to a few meetings and be vetted by you as a competent resource for the
sure.
SUPERS programs. Could they be trained? There's a training mm-hmm. set up for those types
yep,
of people, and they can set up their own chapter?
There is a five-hour training in Princeton, and I would say that we've also started creating documents where there are no SUPERS. You've heard of the book, Where There Are No Doctors. We're trying to figure out where there are no SUPERS, too.
How about SUPERS Without Borders, something like that?
Yeah, SUPERS Without Borders. We could do that, too. But we do have information on the SUPERS website and my personal website so that we can help people within an hour and a half of Princeton with the trainings right here in Princeton, but then I also have documents explaining how to do this for people, as you put it, who have a fire in their belly and know how to cook. You can learn the program by reading and videos and so forth, but you have to know how to cook. There is no way we are turning around these national epidemics of chronic illness without bringing back cooking. So cooks, remote cooks, could also do it.
Right. Or we could do it, you know, we could have like telemedicine. We could Skype some of the meetings, perhaps, for some
yep,
people.
Yep, we're starting to Skype our trainings as well.
That's great. So what vision do you have for this? Do you feel like you could have, you know, by, you know, 2020 chapters in all 50 states? Do you see this as a burgeoning movement, or do you kind of want to, you know, keep your focus and maintain some regional identity?
Well, I would say since eating is a very intimate, local, place-based experience, if, or to the extent that we go viral or that we really scale, it's still going to be SUPERS times 100, SUPERS times 1,000. It's still going to be small, intimate, local experiences of 8, 10, 12 people in a kitchen and sitting around a table. How it will scale, we don't know, because after years of research on the subject, there isn't anything that's like this as a free-to-users program. You know, you can take cooking lessons, you can go to a registered
yep.
dietitian, you can do all of these things, but so far it doesn't exist elsewhere as a nearly free-to-users program. So I would say now we're at about 45 facilitators and 400 events a year, and we ought to be able to get easily up to 100 or 150 facilitators in New Jersey within the next couple of years. And then after that, scaling is going to depend on finding the support of, you know, donors and contributors and people who will invest in the process. So we are at very least a model. We can turn around, or we can facilitate a person turning around type 2 diabetes in a free-to-users program. We can get people with celiac disease and rheumatoid arthritis off of medications or down on their medications as long as the reason for their inflammation is driven by food. That's why you have to do the experiments to see if is it driven by food. So what I'm assuming with your help, thank you very much, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah, want to get the word out.
Is as we get more recognition for this, somebody is going to want to study it, because as you so aptly pointed out in your first version of the podcast, we are throwing money at this problem. They are funding just unbelievably ill-advised studies that are never going to lead to anything until people start dealing with the fact that the processed foods are inherently addictive. They operate on the same receptor sites as cocaine and morphine in many instances. So if you want to talk about, you know, will the child pick chocolate milk if it's harder to reach in the lunch line? I mean, they've actually studied this. 2,000 or 3,000 kids in urban settings. Guess what? They reach for the chocolate milk. It's like saying, well, if I had a house and the heroin addicts were on the first floor and the heroin was on the fourth floor, like, where would the heroin addicts go?
Right.
They have they have to deal with the fact that these foods are by design meant to be inherently addictive. That once there is a community dialogue about that and it's more widely accepted, I think then suppers or, you know, programs like suppers can absolutely take off because the need is global.
Well, you've articulated the issue beautifully, and congratulations on your success so far. It's a marvelous vision, and you're well on your way to implementing it in a big way. So for our listening audience, what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? First of all, the website, thesuppersprograms.org. Right.
And at dorothymullen.com, that's my own personal little website. If people are not in, you know, within an hour and a half of Princeton, New Jersey, you can go to my personal website to get this information on where there are no suppers. Here's how you can build what we call an intentional community. We build these communities around shared intentions to live according to our health needs rather than according to our impulses. So I would say that's probably the best way to go. Visit the Suppers website. If you're not within an hour and a half of Princeton, visit my personal website for information about how to start one of these communities. We do have a book called Logical Miracles, which is about 130 stories of how people have turned around major health problems through the simple acts of creating community around the intention to eat well. And Logical Miracles is available on Amazon. And other than that, I will just say, you know, via one of the websites, send me an email, you know, sign up for our newsletter, because we are committed to making this available to anybody, you know, make our information available to anybody who is willing to take the time and make the effort to take on this big challenge of making these very difficult diet and lifestyle changes that go against their interest in food, their, you know, their whatever, their laziness, their impulse control problems. We love them all. We acknowledge that everybody has these challenges for reasons that probably have very little to do with themselves, definitely not weak-willed or lacking willpower. It's mostly that you're up against the bottom line of corporate food manufacturers, and building community around these intentions seems to be the best antidote.
It absolutely is. And, you know, you're doing a wonderful job. I really appreciate you coming on, and I really want to spread your message. So we'll have you on again soon to talk about any new developments for the Suppers programs. Thank you very much. And, you know, perhaps sometime I'll head down to New Jersey and join in on one of those dinners. Sounds great.
Okay. We'll put a knife in your hand.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'll carve the rutabaga.
Stop the carrots.
Thank you. I'm a good chopper. Okay, thanks very much, Dorothy Mullen, for joining us. The book is Logical Miracles, and we'll put a link up to the book on our website when we post this podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.